Welcome to The Big Picture with your host, Harrison Newton. Hit the subscribe and share the word.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm very pleased to say I've got Marco back on the show. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, guys. Hey, Harrison. Thanks for having me back, mate.
I know.
It's been a year since our first one, right?
Yeah, it's been a crazy year as well. It's really good to have you back. You're obviously the business guru. Some of your predictions were pretty good. You told everyone to buy Bitcoin, and I told you you were stupid.
Obviously, no financial advice or recommendations coming from me. But yeah, we did talk about Bitcoin in that first episode. And yeah, it was pretty funny. I was copying a bit of flack from you because I think it had plummeted along with everything else after COVID. And I was feeling pretty ashamed of that. I've been a Bitcoin enthusiast.
Yeah.
But since then, it's gone up 580%. So
yeah.
You should have bought some.
I know. Isn't that funny how I got that completely wrong and now your kids are going to be rich?
Yeah, or not. Or it could burst again.
It's crazy. Why has it risen so much?
Oh, it was interesting because like I was listening to our first podcast and when we were chatting back in April 2020. And I suppose where I was coming from was like Bitcoin is sort of seen as like a medium of exchange. And we're saying how, you know, Venezuela, people would, instead of taking wheelbarrows of money down to the shop, they'll go down there with their phone and they'll buy stuff on with Bitcoin. But I think the use case for Bitcoin has changed now, like completely. People aren't using it to buy stuff. They're just using it to store money. And I suppose it's a reaction to all the stimulus that all the governments have been pumping into the market is just asset prices everywhere have gone crazy. Bitcoin's gone up. House prices have gone up, which we talk about quite a bit. Yeah.
Because just to introduce the show a bit today, that's what we want to talk about. This episode's a bit of a reflection 1 year on from our first conversation, because basically at the time COVID had just hit, the share market dropped 30 or 40%, and we were sitting there trying to predict the next year.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's exciting to see how wrong I was and how right you were.
Well, you've taken that first episode off the air because I think the audio quality was quite bad, but there's some really awesome little snippets in there which I was just cracking up at. Like, yeah, we're talking about share market, cryptocurrency, speaking about vaccines and like what the future of New Zealand was.
And you got the vaccine rollout right.
Yeah, that was a bit of a guess, but and we actually talked about in the very first one, talked about like, yeah, sure, they can come up with a vaccine, but how do they mass produce it and roll it out for the global population? Like that just seemed like insanely mammoth task. And it's turning out to be exactly that. Like there's vaccines out there, but like 0.01% of New Zealand's population has been vaccinated.
Yeah.
You know, it's good to see like places like in the US and the UK where they've been hit hard by COVID, their rollouts are happening a lot more rapidly. But yeah, I mean, I still think global international travel won't be until like a year and a half, 2 years away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because that's fascinating.
Yeah, it is, eh?
Why do you think it will be that long away still?
I just think they're struggling to...
Because that was your prediction, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That it would take a few years.
Yeah.
Well, I was like... an optimist. I was a year.
Yeah, well, we kind of got the vaccine date right when they were like, well, we've cracked the vaccine. And then since then, there's been like, you know, 7 or 8 different vaccines from different companies around the world. But I think what's difficult is just the logistical task of trying to vaccinate everyone. Like Australia's got 2 million vials of COVID-19 vaccine just sitting in warehouses throughout the country.
Why is that?
That's just they don't have the logistics of getting it into people's arms.
Wow. Because I know the New Zealand government now, we're trying to roll up to like 10,000 a month, eh?
Yeah. Huh. Which is, you know, we've still got a population of 5 million people. 10,000 a month, like, you do the maths on that one, that's going to... And you need like 75 to 80% of the population to be vaccinated, so...
I don't think we're going to get 70 to 80%.
I don't think so either.
I think we'll be doing well if we get 50% to take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just with the internet and everything, like there's a real mass hysteria around it because it was bad before, but now they've made a vaccine in a year.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's it. And I think it's interesting seeing like how it's rolling out in Israel because they've got like a small population and they've had really good uptake in vaccinations. But what they're finding now, so The first stages are really easy because you get like New Zealand sewn it now. You get all like the border workers, flight crew, you get nurses and doctors and all the frontline people. And then you start moving on to immunosuppressed and like the elderly. Mm. And these are all people who are really motivated to get the vaccine. But the problem you get...
they have an incentive to get it.
Exactly, yeah. Or they're aware of the health risks. But then as you get further down the tail end, you're getting young people who don't really care. You're getting people who, yeah, conspiracy theorists that think there's a microchip in the vaccine, not in your pocket.
Yeah.
not your phone. Don't worry about your phone that tracks every single thing you do. But it's the vaccine that's going to be the one doing that. Yeah, so as you get further down the list, then people aren't motivated to get it. So I think in Israel, I was reading that they actually go into bars and they give you a free drink if you get a vaccine that night.
Wow.
So they'll have like a little station set up and they'll give you a shot.
Because we have to advertise it.
Yeah.
What advertising scheme is New Zealand going to do, eh?
That's it. I don't know. I mean, New Zealand's been pretty good with the communication around COVID and stuff.
Oh, we're going to do better than maybe the States and stuff, but... Yeah. I still think we're going to need some good marketing campaigns.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So it's really interesting looking back because what COVID's really shown us is when we were in the middle of it and we saw that volatility, what happened when the share market went down 30% and everything crashed? We went into chaos and we didn't know who was going to come out on top. And what we've found now is there really is winners and losers from this economic fallout from COVID.
Yeah.
And essentially, we've seen the rich get much, much richer.
That's it. And we kind of spoke about it in that first podcast as it's almost like an experiment that the central banks were doing because we've obviously never had a global health crisis like this in modern times. It was like the Spanish flu or whatever, and that's, you know, quite long ago. So the central banks and the reserve banks of the world flooded the market with stimulus and
money.
And money, pretty much. That basically just ensured that the rich got richer. And those people who are, that are living day to day and week to week that were suddenly out of a job or had been in a company that had been restructured, you know, found themselves doing harder times. And that was true. So what the Reserve Bank and the central banks did was pump the market back full of money. And then all this money needed a home to go to. So then it's now found itself into assets.
Which rich people own.
Yeah, so like...
Why did it go there? Because I know in the US they got stimulus checks, so everyone in the country got $1,400.
Yeah.
And that just made rich people richer. How?
How the rich got richer wasn't so much through those stimulus checks, but it was more through the loan programs that central banks opened up to businesses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there was cheaper access to capital, basically, and interest rates were cut. So companies like Amazon could go to the market and draw down huge amounts of capital and only pay small amount of interest on it. Yes. And then I suppose where we've seen some real winners and losers of the whole thing is like this huge shift to digital and this huge shift to online shopping. So like Amazon, for example, you know, everyone's stuck at home. Yeah. Everyone's just shopping online. So Amazon just went crazy. Zoom went crazy, obviously, because everyone's now doing online calls instead of...
Yeah.
In person.
So what really helped get the rich get richer was the fact that interest rates went down, and it's sort of complicated to explain, but when interest rates go down, if you put your money in the bank, you'll make less money. You know, interest rates might drop to 1%. When it's so low and you're not getting return on your money, that pushes the money in other places, right?
Because yeah, exactly. So government bonds are like the safest possible place that you can put your money. So that's pretty much backed by the government. So in the US, it's a US Treasury bond. And we've got a similar thing here in New Zealand. So that's like the safest form of investment. And now those rates are so low because of the actions created by the Reserve Bank, etc., that money is looking for a return somewhere else.
Yeah, so because if you're an investor like myself, I don't want to make 1% a year. I want to make at least 7%, right? Yeah,
exactly. And so that's kind of what happened. And then I think the other interesting thing we spoke about in our first podcast was around like sharesies and like how new apps and stuff are kind of coming up and Robinhood. And then that's obviously changed the dynamic massively in the US as this like Robinhood / Reddit investor, which are like young people. And the young people are probably one of the losers from the whole COVID situation because young people are typically the ones working in service industries. Yeah. They're typically the first ones to go if there's been a restructure in a business. So you've got all these young people sitting at home that have got, you know, $3,000-$4,000 of stimulus checks that have just arrived in the mail, that have got a gamified trading platform on their phone, which is essentially uses the same tactics that social media does to reward behavior. Like, I think if you buy your first stock on Robinhood, you get like confetti pops up and like, yeah, and you get like push notifications and like all those tools that are used by Facebook and social media to hook people in are now being used by trading platforms. So that's a really interesting other part of the market that has changed quite dramatically since we spoke last year. There's now younger people getting involved. And we kind of spoke last year about you can get into the share market without knowing too much about the financials as long as you do a base level of research before you jump in. But what we're seeing now with the retail traders is that people are just jumping into anything. GameStop is probably an example that you've heard of, where it was basically a meme, what they call a meme stock. So it's a physical retailer of computer games. So that whole business model is antiquated because everything's now moving online.
Yeah.
But that whole hype just came around the short squeeze that a hedge fund was doing, and then everyone just piled in on it. So that was like a really interesting little story.
Yeah, so everyone's moved their money away out of just keeping it in the bank.
Mm.
Some people put it into housing, buying more houses. That's why the properties have gone up. Like you said, that share market is a real mix of people putting money in there because they want to make better returns than the bonds, but they're okay with paying more because they don't want 10% return anymore. They're happy with 7%.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, those kids coming in on board who frankly can't afford a house, got cash on the side, and don't mind a bit of gambling.
Yeah, that's it. It's crazy.
So just to basically summarize that interest rates, when the returns in the banks went down, all these rich older people were saying like, hey, I don't want 1%, I want at least 6%. So they pumped their money into the stock market and into the housing market. And that's essentially why we've seen both those booms, because everyone's chasing that money.
Yeah.
And that's been the foundation of why the rich have got richer, has it?
Yeah, well, I think if you look at New Zealand and New Zealand property market, it just went crazy, right? Like,
what are we up, 40% now?
Yeah, so 2020, I think it was up 20%, and then we're up like 14% year to date, and we're in April. So the market has just gone absolutely insane. And I think that's probably because Kiwis don't really like investing in the share market.
Yeah.
And we've got like the older generation, some would call them boomers.
I've decided I got
to... Is it a derogatory term? I don't know.
I know. I have to cut it from my vocabulary because it actually sounds aggressive.
Yeah, I know.
It's funny how just a word like that changed into a swear word.
Yeah,
I
know.
It feels naughty now.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've got a lot of equity tied up in property anyway, and they were able to use that equity to buy other properties when the Reserve Bank dropped the loan-to-value ratio for investors down to 5%, which is crazy. So that's what they did as a result, because they were worried about house prices dropping because of COVID.
So is that what started it?
Yeah, and that was the rocket fuel that was placed under the New Zealand housing market. Because for me, as a first home buyer, I need to scrape together 20% deposit, which an average Auckland property house is $1 million. So I need to pull together $200,000. Whereas a property investor only needed 5%.
Whoa.
So they only needed to pull together...
So it was just a huge incentive. Sorry, pull together
$50,000. $50,000, yeah. And then they could use the equity in their existing house to offset that. So you hear these stories, and like lots of my friends are going to auctions, you know, and houses are going for $200,000-$300,000 more than the reserve, and they're more than often being purchased by older people. Because then you rent them out and then...
You only need 3 or 4% return. It's still better than the bank, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got the capital gain that you're getting on it as well. So,
and then Jacinda said she didn't say she wanted property prices to go down.
Of course not.
And no, she said New Zealanders expect property prices to go up.
Yeah, exactly.
100%. So it's a safe bet.
They have to, because so much of the average New Zealander's money is tied up in residential property.
Yeah. So I really didn't know that the government incentivized people. So all this investment just incentivized rich people to put their money in other places. So those were the two really big winners from this. And the losers really were young people, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, there's probably been a lot of people that have been really negatively impacted from this. There's tourism, hospitality industries in New Zealand. There's people who are living paycheck to paycheck, usually working in like service industries.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, poor people, young people.
Have been the worst affected.
Yeah, well, and then there's obviously the people who have actually contracted COVID-19. We shouldn't laugh.
Everyone's just worried.
I suppose the other losers are like countries that weren't able to control COVID as well as New Zealand and Australia, and had some pretty massive health implications, like the death toll in the US and Western Europe and the UK and India and Brazil. I mean, the list kind of continues. It's pretty horrific disease.
So it was basically only homeowners and people who have lots of shares who did well. Everyone else has had a really rough time.
Yeah.
So we're talking 90% of people probably didn't have a great time.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, the anxiety that surrounds it too. You know, I've got friends in the US who have been cooped up in their house for like the last year.
Wow.
They haven't been able to go to their workplace.
I always wonder, because we forget about it, but some people actually have been living in their house for a year.
Yeah, I know.
I thought there would be hearing more like suicidal.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a huge undercurrent of that. Like, people's homes are no longer their homes. They're now their workplace, where they have their food, where they exercise, where they look after their kids. Like, we had small experiences like that in New Zealand before, like, you know, the longest was 6 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that's my whole point. My mental health after 6 weeks, I was like, I had had enough. But imagine the hope disappearing after a year.
Oh, yeah. We're incredibly lucky that we managed to control it so well here. And we are lucky. Like, there's so many cases where New Zealand could have been in such a worse position, but we just got lucky. Like, the case of the person who contracted it, went and got a test and then went to the gym, worked out. Another person who went and worked at KFC, like, these are all cases where they could have been super spreader events and that could have become,
oh wow,
like, uncontrollable. But for some reason, New Zealand has kind of coasted through and like had no community transmission. So
yeah, so when we really messed up, we didn't really suffer as much as we probably should have, because like you said, they weren't super clusters after that. Like, the first lockdown, some of the clusters were 100 people.
Yeah, that's it. We got lucky. So
wow.
Yeah.
So New Zealand is really lucky. The real problem is, it's so unfortunate that the inequality basically has just boomed. You know, we were already having an inequality problem, but this has just put it on steroids, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And I think the interesting thing is, like, when we first spoke, there was the first round of wage subsidies and stuff like that. And I suppose no one really knew what the true impact was going to be.
Yeah.
But then the result of all that is, like, some luxury brands are doing better than ever. There's all this money sloshing around. There's a lot of wealthy people that would normally, you know, spend the winter in Europe and travel around. So the people who have money to burn, whereas the people on the other side are doing it harder than they've ever done it before.
So that poverty's increased rapidly. And like you said, the government basically doesn't want the housing prices to drop, because that's what's stimulating the economy. Yeah. If your housing price has gone up $200,000 from this crisis, you can spend more because you got that capital. You can even get more of your loan out, can't you?
Yeah, that's it. So you can draw down on the equity on your house. And I'm sure there's been lots of people that have done that. And I mean, you'd almost be silly not to go back to your bank and renegotiate your mortgage when interest rates are as low as they are.
Wow. So, because interest rates are low and because their prices have gone up, why not borrow more? And that's what everyone's done.
Yeah. But I suppose on the flip side of that is, like, these interest rates aren't going to be this low forever.
So basically, yeah, this inequality's increased, and, you know, it's the young and the poor. And what that essentially tells us is it's going to keep rising until we do something. What do you think we should do from here?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question that I think Jacinda's probably pondering over at the moment. Probably a little bit outside of my pay grade, but
you don't want to drop those house prices, so she's not trying to do too much.
Yeah, I mean, and we spoke about it before in one of our previous episodes around the Reserve Bank is like kind of there to maintain financial security for people, and we spoke about, are recessions good? I think that was the theme of our most recent one, and I suppose the Reserve Bank hates recession, so they do everything they can to kind of stop it. But the result of stopping this recession, even though we did technically go into a recession, has been this huge inequality that's happened. So, I mean, it's buy Bitcoin is my answer. This okay. is not financial advice. Do not buy Bitcoin.
Okay, Mark, that was a great wrap-up of what a crazy year. And the unfortunate thing is the picture is much worse, basically. Inequality's gone through the roof, so time to start buying Bitcoin, like you said.
This is not financial advice.
But thanks for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to have you, and looking forward to having you back.
Awesome, mate. Yeah, hopefully we'll catch up soon, and hopefully the picture will be a little bit rosier than what I've painted.
Oh, I'm not expecting it to be any rosier. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, mate.
That was The Big Picture. Hit the subscribe and share the word.